So I would just say along those lines, the uniformity of data question, while it is an issue, I think in thinking about the bond, it's a mistake to think that all the data needs to be uniform. Because if we're asking the question, why are we monitoring and what decisions are we helping people make, those decisions are at different scale and require different data sets and different levels of data. So we don't need to get wrapped around the axle about making sure that Joe's data can talk to Susie's data, can talk to Bill Mook's data, you know, your offshore buoy data. We need those three different data pieces for three different reasons, so they may not have to talk to each other.
Nick, I would get some guidance from this California current certification network. I mean, they do have three, you know, levels beyond which don't bother, right? And so I think that at minimum, and those three data sets should be able to talk to each other.
Can you talk more about that?
So we have, so if you want to monitor acidification, you need to, a lot of people think acidification is just pH alone, but it's only part of the story. Okay, so we need other carbonate, what's called carbonate parameters, to understand the fullness of the effect of acidification on organisms. And so there are basically four carbonate parameters that we can measure. One is called dissolved inorganic carbon. Almost impossible to monitor that at high frequencies. It's a very expensive measurement. Alkalinity, there are some alkalinity sensors out there right now, and we're developing one. That's also very hard, and that's going to be a decade before those become commercially available at a reasonable price. Then there's pH. There's been tremendous advances with this XPRIZE recently in pH monitoring, and we should have pH instruments that come down to about $1,000 that could be scientifically robust. And then there's what I think is the very best measurement that we can measure is this partial pressure of carbon dioxide. There's a variety of ways to measure this, and it typically costs between $4,000 and $10,000 or $20,000 to measure this, depending on how accurate you want to get it. We're also developing a really inexpensive one right now. I have a PhD student that's doing that, and that's really promising, but that'll be a while. So we need at least two of these to measure carbonate chemistry. And you can circumvent those and measure, do a really good job of measuring oxygen, temperature, salinity, and one of those carbonate parameters and make a guess at, make a model, a rough model. And sometimes that works fairly good. And if you look at this California current acidification recommendations, then that's one way forward. So, a rig's going to cost you between maybe $3,000 to $4,000 to get the parameters you need, to $20,000 to $50,000 to get the parameters that you need. If you go put this stuff on buoys, it's more expensive, right? And I think we need to measure buoys. We need to know how this coastal ocean is interacting with the offshore ocean. We need to understand something about what's coming down from Canada. Most of our fresh water in the Gulf of Maine, even in the coastal Gulf of Maine, does not come from the local rivers, Penobscot, Kennebec, Merrimack. It comes from the Scotian Shelf. Most of the fresh water comes from the St. Lawrence, the ice that's melting in the Arctic, much, much more than these rivers. We need to know what the carbonate chemistry... you didn't read the Ocean Commission report then. You want to hide something from these guys, put it in the Ocean Committee. So we need to know a lot about how the offshore water interacts with the inshore water. You know, you can say the same thing about nutrients. It seems like the higher concentrations are right up against the coast, but most of the nutrient that comes in through the coast comes from offshore. So that's another thing we don't understand very well.
Have you considered looking at target organisms as bioindicators?
There it is. Canary
in the coal mine kind of thing.
I think that to some degree our level of understanding of how the organisms will be impacted by ocean acidification limits their use as bioindicators. Because in the environment they're being affected by so many different parameters, but our laboratory studies have focused on usually OA only, or maybe OA and temperature, but haven't considered nutrient availability or food availability. I'm not sure that we're ready to have bioindicators. In some cases, maybe I'll defer now to Mike and that's in you think so based on your work that you've been doing.
The bioindicators, no.
Okay.
You need to monitor the health of a species and say this is
some little plant that doesn't live there anymore, or it's thriving because of this. You know, like I said, the canary in the coal mine.
Yep.
Is it alive or is it doing not too well?
So I did indicator species work in the Arctic in the 1970s and 80s, working on seabirds in the Bering Sea. Monitoring one seabird can tell us an awful lot about the particular places in the water column where that seabird likes to feed, where that seabird likes to hang out, where that seabird likes to breed. It doesn't tell us anything else about its neighbor that eats something completely different and burrows instead of builds a nest. So indicators can tell you a lot about one silo. That's all. And it won't tell you anything about why the ecology around them is changing. So that's one of the reasons we stick with the water chemistry. Joe, with all due respect, I have to say, our data shows that, at least in Casco Bay, the inshore inputs of nitrogen clearly seem to be related to human activity.
Yes, the concentration gradient from inshore to offshore, which I said, are very clearly higher inshore. But if you do a circulation model and you look at...
If you're out in the Gulf of Maine...
Right. You look at all that circulation, you know, even though it might be 3 micromole offshore, 3 times a million is a lot more than 20 times 10.
Sure. You know? And one of our challenges, of course, is when we get into the education and outreach piece, and we want to look at what are things we can try to get people to do to change their behavior, then I don't want it to get lost. It's a little bit like the lobster larval point in the solid point.
No, Kathy, I'm saying the same thing. I don't want the offshore to get lost. Because quite frankly, when I was in this Ocean Acidification Commission, it did feel that way, you know? And I love coastal acidification, you know? I mean, this is a serious problem. We need to understand this. This little thin ribbon is where, you know, super high value in the coast of Maine, but unless we know how these two are connected, we're not doing the state of Maine the service that we need to.
I agree. I just want us to be careful on that public education grant.
Right.
Is there something that you as a regular rank-and-file citizen can do that can make a difference? And I know that there are. So
I'm inclined to look at this two ways. I think we need to do a certain amount of expansion of what we're measuring in the near shore, and I think we need to add instrumentation to buoys in the Gulf as well. And because I think, you know, to the questions earlier about do you have any models? Well, how do you develop models? You develop models by having enough information to see if there is a model that would represent that occurrence. So I think that's one of the things that we need to do, and I think that that we need to have that as well for our riverine systems and the, you know, coves and circulatory patterns in the bays around them that would influence the effectiveness of the mitigation measures that we're trying to spend time and energy evaluating. Would it identify where the places are that we should be concentrating on the experiments with in situ impact on the environment. And I think that we have to have a certain amount of both. And the question is, where are the gaps today that are detracting from our being able to proceed with the experiments, proceed with the model development, and support the studies that are going on in the state of Maine. And if we can figure out where the three greatest gaps are, I mean, obviously we have so much infrastructure in the near shore with people already trying to examine that and monitor it, but we haven't got a consistency of what's being measured, to your point about looking at the calcium chemistry and all, necessary for it to be useful in relation to the experiments that are being conducted. So I really think we need to look at what are we trying to answer. And for me, it's the model. It's the supporting the experiments in the environment. And it's asking what holes are we leaving for being able to apply this to our real circumstances as we want to test mitigations.
I heard Kathy also add that there's an education component to monitoring, that just sort of engaging and engaged citizenry component to modeling.
Sure, but that's not part of a bond discussion.
Okay.
Can't.
So
that's just for